This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download podcast. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we discuss the potential change to laws that could impact big tech in the future.
To make social media companies liable for what they publish, and that would completely change the dynamics for the likes of Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, etc.
Opportunities in China.
As the private sector, the truly private sector, becomes bigger, it becomes better run, it becomes broader in scope, and it is driven by consumer and technology in particular, and there's going to be tremendous opportunities for investors in that market going forward.
And the impact of Europe's new Green Deal.
I would go so far as to say that I think the sustainable energy trend or theme is going to be probably the most powerful theme of the next 10 years alongside the technology transition.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Welcome to the show. We've got a bit of a change up this week. Phil Haddon will be hosting and firing the questions at Alex Tedder, who is head of global equities and an investor in disruption. They discuss Europe's potentially revolutionary Green Deal and what it means for investors looking to invest in the sector. They also discuss the rise of China as the next big superpower, the opening up of Chinese markets and the opportunities available to willing investors. But first, they chat technology. Bosses of four of the five big tech firms in the US were recently brought before Congress and quizzed about anti-competitive behaviour. Around the same time, those firms also announced results that blew the lights out on Wall Street. Before they got into how government might tackle anti-competitive behaviour, Phil asks Alex how tech firms' results managed to surprise Wall Street, given the amount of scrutiny they face from both analysts and the media. Enjoy.
Yeah, great question. It's very interesting, isn't it, that despite the fact that everyone knows these big companies, these big tech companies, they're household names, they're extremely well covered on Wall Street, as you'd expect. And yet, despite that, earnings last week came as really an amazing surprise to the market and to analysts generally, just because the top line was so strong across the board. I mean, all these companies had very good revenue growth, with the possible exception of Google, which we can talk about. But they generally had pretty good revenue growth, to exceptionally good revenue growth in some cases, and they had earnings delivery as well. And that is the beauty of these business models, Phil. They are beneficiaries. They have been beneficiaries of COVID in many cases. And they have business models that enable them to leverage that scale to the bottom line. And the best example of that is Amazon, where they produced earnings. Earnings are very volatile with Amazon, but they produced earnings in the quarter of $10.30. Consensus estimates were for $1.40. in the quarter. So it just gives you an idea of how big some of these beats have been.
It's enormous, isn't it? And there's not really any end in sight, because even if the COVID crisis recedes, I can't really see the market dominance receding. Can you?
Yeah, no, I can't. That is the key question. We'll come on to valuation in a second, as I'm sure we must, Phil. But just in terms of how these companies are positioned, and how much they benefited from this ongoing transformation that we've experienced in an accelerated way through the COVID crisis. In other words, people working from home, shopping from home, you know, playing from home, if you like, whether it's gaming or social media or whatever. These companies have been right at the forefront of that, and the whole COVID experience has accelerated the trend that was already ongoing and has been ongoing for some time. Now, I just can't see, as things stand, those business models being materially and negatively impacted. In fact, quite the opposite, unless we get a change in regulation. That, for me, is the big issue right now. It's not the business models. It's not the outlook for revenue or earnings for these companies. It's regulation.
Well, that's the key question, isn't it? And the timing of their earnings was quite interesting, because it was the same week they appeared in front of Congress, the chief executives, So I know you see regulation as the biggest threat to their dominance.
I do.
What might that actually look like, do you think?
What we see are two major risks. One is there is a move already underway to limit or to change the framework in which social media companies operate. I mean, without going into too much detail, there is something called a Section 230 Act in the US communications law that exempts social media companies from liability for anything that gets published on their websites. That is in contrast, for example, to the printed press sector that does not have that exemption. Now, there is a move already underway in the US, quite a powerful one, well supported by many, many factions, to remove that exemption, to change Section 230, to make social media companies liable for what they publish. And that would completely change the dynamics for the likes of Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, etc. It would be a very, very major change. So that's one thing we need to watch very closely. And the second and related aspect is that when we get a Democrat regime in November, as I think we probably will, we'll see how the politics plays out, but I think it's highly likely we will get a change of administration in the US election this autumn. The Democrats have a much more proactive policy when it comes to antitrust regulation generally and to big tech in particular. And it's quite likely that they will regulate against the likes of Amazon, Google, and the other names in some shape or form. So we've got some risk building. We need to be aware of those. Difficult to quantify at this point, but the effects could be quite dramatic going forward.
So you mentioned valuations before. How are they looking on a sort of on a price to earnings basis, and how high could they go? I mean, are they looking unreasonable, or are they still?
I mean, this is the question, and apart from the regulation. And there are two different ways to look at the valuations of big cap tech. I mean, yes, on a headline basis, the valuations of the big five are somewhat higher than the markets. I mean, on a 2020 basis, the big five are trading at about 33 times full year earnings. The S&P is on 24 times full year earnings for 2020. So not materially different. And I accept that S&P earnings ex-tech are quite depressed at the moment. So yeah, there is scope for S&P earnings to recover at some point quite materially outside of the tech sector. But if you look at those headline numbers, Phil, the 35 times versus the 24 times, that difference to us is more than justified by the sort of returns in terms of profitability. The margins of the big five are roughly double those of the S&P as a whole. And in terms of return on capital, return on investment and cash flow generation, where typically these big tech companies are earning return on equity or return on capital, that's two or three times the market, if not higher. So we think the valuation gap is justified. We don't see valuations compressing. I mean, valuations for equities generally are quite high at the moment because of the whole interest rate effect and the discount rate effect. But that's a separate issue. When it comes to tech, we think the valuation premium that you're paying for tech generally is justified, absent any change in the regulatory framework.
Okay. Well, these are obviously the sort of disruptors in chief, but as an investor in disruption, do you see any disruptors of disruptors on the landscape? Or?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we're always on the lookout for those. And I think, you know, there will be undoubtedly some new competitors emerging for the big tech companies over time. But the interesting thing to me is that actually, if you think about the all five, so Amazon, Microsoft, Facebook, Google, Apple, there haven't really been any genuine competitors evolving, emerging to challenge them seriously head on so far. At the margin, yes, but because these companies are already so big, so established, they have such big network effects, such big user bases. I mean, Facebook, as we know, has a user base of roughly 2 billion people worldwide, and that number is growing. These are so entrenched that it's very difficult for competition to really scale up and compete against them effectively. So we're keeping an eye on it, but right now I don't see that challenge as being imminent.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So moving on to the second part of the podcast, we're going to turn our attention to China, where there's also been a lot happening. TikTok's been in the news, keep you on the tech theme, but many other things too. What's piquing your interest over there?
Well, there's two things piquing our interest. One is the simple fact that the political environment is becoming very heated, and the whole TikTok development is a great example of that. It has become highly politicized, and Microsoft have stepped in and tried to make something positive out of the situation by bidding to take on TikTok's US operations as Trump tries to ban TikTok as a whole from the US. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Obviously, we've had trade wars ongoing for some time between China and the US, and the rhetoric, if anything, seems to be heating up quite materially. And indeed, there have been signs of potential military confrontation in the South China Seas more recently, at least the possibility of that becoming less remote than it was several years ago. So politics is an issue. China is at the forefront, and the reason for that is clearly because China is emerging as the other superpower to challenge the US head on. The other aspect is just the emergence of China as a consumer, a balanced economy with a very big consumer sector and a very big technology sector that is likely to grow a lot going forward and will create a momentum of its own. And whilst there are big chunks of the Chinese market that are really in many ways uninvestable, and if you've listened to my colleague Robin Palbrook talk about China, you will have heard him talk about the big proportion of China state-owned enterprises that are really uninvestable because they're really not run for shareholders. But what you are seeing now is just a gradual shift as the private sector, the truly private sector, becomes bigger, it becomes better run, it becomes broader in scope, and it is driven by consumer and technology in particular. And there's going to be tremendous opportunities for investors in that market going forward. The big names are well known. The Tencents and the Alibabas of this world are direct comparables with their US equivalents. But there's going to be a whole lot more Chinese consumer companies, technology companies, financial services companies emerging in the next few years that will be very big over time and very interesting, I think, for investors. And a great example of that is the forthcoming IPO of Ant Financial, which is being spun out of Alibaba, which will create a financial payments giant in its own right that is quite unique in many ways. There's no equivalent in the US.
It's very interesting. As the market evolves, are the governance concerns that some people have in China, are they improving as the private sector becomes more established?
Yeah, they are, slowly. Robbing cautions on many, many parts of the spectrum in the Chinese stock market. But, and he's right, it remains a minefield in many areas, particularly with the state control. But I think the companies that really are the most successful and evolving the most rapidly generally are fairly new companies. The management of those companies are often schooled in the US. They have a mindset that's much more geared to good governance and good management of shareholders generally. The signs are encouraging. So it's early days, but I think governance is gradually improving in China, and that will hopefully be reflected in the valuations that some of these companies can achieve over time.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website shorters.com/investor download.
Moving on to the third part of today's show, I know you're particularly interested in the European Green Deal, which was announced in March. Yes. It's got very important investment implications for fund managers like you.
Definitely. I would go so far as to say that I think the sustainable energy trend or theme is going to be probably the most powerful theme of the next 10 years alongside the technology transition. And it's obviously highly linked with the technology transition as well, because technology is enabling a lot of this green energy transformation to happen. And I think the fact that Europe has stepped up with a very significant stimulus program built around improving environmental outcomes is extremely encouraging, extremely positive for many companies in the region, and will create some tremendous investment opportunities. So Europe already has had a lead in many ways in environmental awareness, much more so than the US and more so than Asia. And that is reflected in the fact that many companies linked to energy transition and linked to dealing with climate change are based in Europe. And we expect that footprint to expand as the European Green Deal ramps, as installation of an adoption of new technologies and new generation forms and distribution forms continues to rise in Europe. And we think this will create a virtuous circle of opportunity in that region.
So how does the Green Deal actually work then? I mean, I read that it's worth up to sort of a trillion. So there's subsidies for sort of green companies, or?
Yes, these are very broad-based subsidies. They're subsidies for companies to make the transition to renewable energy if they're in that space. So if they're generators or energy companies, to make that transition, they provide incentivization for that transition to happen. So utility companies, for example. They are subsidies for the whole electric vehicle space, either at the producer level or in terms of grants to manufacturers of electric vehicles, or grants to consumers to stimulate the penetration rate of electric vehicles very broadly, actually in the consumer and in the business space, because it will also subsidize the adoption of environmentally friendly vehicles by businesses for delivery and for transportation more broadly, and then it's all the way through to providing incentive for farmers to adopt different types of technology that are more environmentally consistent, for utilities across their networks to adopt different technologies to improve the distribution of power and the efficiency of power delivery. And really, a very, very broad space. And within Europe, you obviously already have champions like Vestas Wind Systems, which is a leader in wind turbines, which we're very excited about, as well as the utility companies themselves that are leading in terms of their global footprint in the environmental space.
And have these companies sort of started pricing in? The share price of these companies started pricing in the implications of this Green Deal, or do you think the market's underestimating it so far?
No, I think they have. Well, I think there's already been a recognition by many investors that this trend is likely to be persistent and pervasive and very, very powerful. The share prices of many companies, large or small, linked to energy transition have already responded materially. You only have to look at, for example, companies that are linked to green hydrogen, which may or may not be one way for energy to be stored, green energy to be stored very effectively, stored and used at a later date. And companies involved with green hydrogen have had huge moves in their share prices in Europe this year, and there's a growing interest in that space. So investors are definitely starting to recognize it. What I would say, though, is I think the size of the addressable market and the adoption rate are still being underestimated by the broader market. And that is the opportunity for us going forward, is to tap into that and to find the companies that are winners in this new greener environment.
Great. Well, we live in interesting times. Thank you very much for joining us today, Alex.
My pleasure. Thanks for your time.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.